Well, I think that what I'm trying to do, my endeavor is to put up or shut up. In other words, this is I'm dealing with hard data here,
mm-hmm.
and my quest, Bill, is to find those creditable people out there with information who might be willing to talk. Now, this mm-hmm. is one of the problems because most of the people who have been involved in a retrieval operation, military, of course. Or had been in an opportune position to see the crap in the bodies. Most of them are under some kind of oath, security oath.
There is that great security oath, and it's a formidable thing.
And it is formidable because to get through that is very difficult. It takes much time. It takes some expense to track these people down, to get them willing to relate, and then usually on the condition that you'll never reveal their name, their identity, you will get the information or part of it. Well, of course, the difficulty there, Bill, is for me to translate that to the public and say, well, I got 15, 20, 25 people who told me such and such, but I can't give you the name or the identity. And see, that makes my case a case of hearsay.
Would you like to go over just the high points of what that oath?
Could be certain other specifics in there too that you could lose your pension, you could do all sorts of little things like that that are the type of thing to make one disinclined to relate.
Well, basically, doesn't person you lose all of your pensions and your benefits?
That's right, you lose all of that.
All of that.
And all the indignities.
You're looking forward to a jail sentence.
Very conceivable, yes.
And you're looking forward to also a charge of felonious
theater,
which is a firing squad offense, by the way.
I think even more dangerous than a jail sentence, which would be an obvious thing, is the fact that you just suddenly disappear.
Yeah, now, we have cases of that.
I hate to say this, but I mean, in my work, I have, in the last, 4 years, there's an amazing number of people who have surfaced to me who have never resurfaced, and I can't even locate them. And I don't know what that means. I'm not suggesting that they've been eliminated, but I don't know. This completely mystifies me, and I have hunted some of these people down, and there have been close to a dozen people who just seem like they vanished from Earth after they related the information to me, and that does bother me. And that is a fact. Because I know what I'm doing the people I've talked with,
mm-hmm.
and I know where they were at one time, but when they've been completely uprooted.
And I know who I've talked with.
And, and the story is the same. It's the same scenario. In my new paper coming out, this is a sequel to the Gather Report, which you're familiar with.
Sure.
The whole package relates one of fear. From the informant, from the beginning until he either disappears or says he can't talk anymore or whatever other reason that comes up that he can no longer relate. Now, some of them may last a year before they just vanish, and some of them you may get in one phone call or one meeting, and that's it. And this bothers me, and because I realize what I'm doing is a very sensitive thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care to transgress or to get involved with security. I mean, I'm a good, loyal American citizen. It's not that. I'm not a rebel of any sort. But the thing is, it does bother me that somewhere out there is a sinister force that seems to control these people with information. And that, I must say, I have experienced. I know. And I've endured a few little threats here and there, too, but I
understand
because I think I'm well enough known in this phase of research that if anything should happen to me, why too many people would be able to speak up.
Leonard, I want you to hold it there for just a second.
Sure.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, though, I want to talk about that force and why it's there. Afterward, let's talk about some of the hardcore things that you have uncovered with the crashed UFO.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And And let me say to this audience that we have here, which is rather vast tonight, that there are crashed UFOs. There is a cover-up going on the part of our own government. We are not being dealt with fairly. That's just the, you know, you want to take me to court? Take me to court. I think we can prove that. I just said it in front of a million people. You take me to court. I'd be more than happy to go there because I would love to get it there as far as that goes. And with me is Leonard Stringfield. Leonard probably is the foremost investigator in this particular area of this particular phenomenon and this particular phenomenon of our own government doing it to us as far as that goes, and we really don't need that. I'll be back with you in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Talk radio, AM. Coast to coast, and there are, you know, millions of people that listen to them, and when they get their nighttime package together, we're hoping that Open Mind will be a part of
success there because I would enjoy relating subject on that program actually be a good test.
You'll be one of the first people on. Yeah.
We're sitting on the biggest story ever to happen on Earth. You know, it just overshadows the problems in the Middle East, Hague's.
It's our child's play.
You know, the Argentine situation. All these things are.
All that is
minor.
It really is child's play. What's going on around there?
And I think that I studied this. I try to be objective with myself. I have to be truthful to myself because I have to sleep with myself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, what reasons do we have for secrecy? And you know, there are many premises. And of course, the popular one is the fear of panic. World governments decide that psychologically we couldn't take it, philosophically or religiously, economically we couldn't do it. We just couldn't stand up to the fact.
Well, those,
I think that's worn out now.
Those thoughts came out of the Brookings Institute a long time ago whenever government was first confronted with the fact that we did have alien beings in our presence.
I think it would affect a certain percent of people. I think that maybe even 1% might jump off the bridge somewhere. But, you know, those people would jump for other reasons anyway. So another reason for secrecy would be technological, of course.
That's
to cover up our own progress in duplicating the craft.
Well, we
military purposes.
You know, we've talked about this, and perhaps this does make some sense before.
That would be a good reason for secrecy.
If we have found a crashed UFO here in the United States, which indeed we have done, and the Soviets have found one, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
What that represents is a leg up on technology that is far beyond what any of our nuclear weapon or psychotronic weapon systems or all of those other weapon systems that we have come up with. I mean, it makes all of those child's play if we can crack that nut.
Yes, anti-gravity, for instance.
The anti-gravity thing, the being able to jump through space at, just the technology there is enormous. If we're able to take a crashed UFO and work with it the best we can for maybe 20 or 30 years, if we crack it, that is a technological advance that is unparalleled in history.
That's right. So that could be one reason, plus the fear of panic. You combine the two. Now, another reason, Bill, is that perhaps even though we have the craft and so forth, we may not have all, our government may not have all the facts about the intent, the purpose for them being here.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, not knowing that may give them reason to believe that relating this to the public, that they don't have the final information, may cause more concern to the public.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The fear of the unknown.
Well, this fear I was getting back to, Leonard, is if our government let it be known that, yeah, we had the craft and we were studying them,
mm-hmm.
Would that probably take a Soviet Union? Would that say, hey, we're going to predispose of their ability to put that technology into production by some sort of a strike?
Mm-hmm.
Because now we're in trouble.
Right. It could cause a lot of things unpredictable because the Russian, you know, we have everything geared for a major war on both sides, and something like that may just touch off the button over there to start a war before we got too far with our technology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just guessing.
Well, that's a guess.
So anyway, these are all things I think we have to take into consideration, the reasons for secrecy. And, of course, it's been brought up many times to me by different people, that maybe it is not the government really controlling it after all. Maybe they're just the one end of it. Maybe it is a powerful international controlling force, big money. behind it. But then there are a lot of weaknesses there. I mean, I can see greed would be the purpose there. But it doesn't make much sense why they would keep that from the public just to keep everything intact, the status quo intact, because the world is not intact. But by other reasons, you know.
Keep everybody's head in the sand.
So that doesn't stack up. Although I've heard this sort of information has haunted me for years, that, you know, some big, powerful, controlling force is behind it all. Then, of course, the other reason is that these things have been ours all along. You know, they've been our secret weapon ever since World War II.
Right.
I can't buy that anymore, because that may have been a good reason to believe that back in the early 50s, that we had something under development. But I can't believe that we would keep that sort of a thing, massive scale, that secret for 35, 40 years.
No, I think if...
And mass production, you know what I mean? I just can't see that we would have...
It seems to me that if we had that kind of technology at our disposal, we would have used that kind of technology, and we wouldn't be having the problems we're having right now.
Well, if we had it way back in the early 50s, then how come we didn't use it in the Vietnam War? Which total disgrace, you know what I mean? There would have been a good chance to to use something of that type. What are we saving it for? The big war, you know, I mean, that doesn't make sense either. So I just can't buy even though I do believe that we're trying to duplicate the thing with some degree of success, I can't believe that is the answer to the whole UFO riddle.
But we do have UFOs in our possession.
Yes.
According to your information.
Yes, I have good reason to believe, unless all these people are misinforming me, that we do have the craft, and have had it. Way back to the 50s.
Probably 47.
47, 48, in the United States, also Mexico, and they were retrieved, according to various informants that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the way through the 50s and into the 60s and into the 70s.
Well, you know, we've had the man who would have dropped the third atomic bomb, who was the commander of Roswell Air Force Base, a four-star Air Force general, who's talked openly and freely now, he's on in his years at this point in time, about the crashed UFO near Roswell, New Mexico.
Yes.
And he's talked how the government covered it up, how this frightened Harry Truman, how it frightened General LeMay.
Yes.
And General LeMay lives right here near us. He's in Little Hill.
He's near you.
He's right down in Newport Beach, and, you know, he's a... We hope he gets a lot better, and one of these days we hope he will talk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he would have a lot to say.
He's under the same restriction.
Certainly.
Even more so obligation on his end than a lot of other people because of his position.
But a lot of these men who have been living with this now for 25, 30, 40 years
mm-hmm.
are getting on in age, and they say it is not to the best interest of the American people or the people of this planet to keep it secret any longer. But anyway, you have, you know, that particular gentleman there who was the commander of that Air Force base, which, you know, it doesn't sound like one. Little Air Force base at Roswell, New Mexico in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
It happened to have been the only base that was training in nuclear weaponry at the time, so that made it the most important Air Force base in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he freely talks about the collection of the crashed UFO, the nine bodies aboard, how the government covered it up, how they sent a weather balloon over to Roswell Air Force, or to Carswell Air Force Base in Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, deluded the public. The Los Angeles Times printed in April, I think it was, of 1947, UFO crashes in New Mexico.
Yes.
And the Los Angeles Times was right on that particular headline.
Mm-hmm.
And the cover-up went on.
It's a continuing thing right up to this day. And the those that have crashed in recent years get the same treatment. And what I've done here in this paper is compiled case histories.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in this paper, I had the original copy before me. I have 12 first-person reports. And then I have in the second section of the paper is what I call the intermediary report.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those, that is, people that were so frightened to relate to me, they can only relate through a intermediary. The type of information they wish to.
We've had some of them on the air here, Larry.
They feel safer that way. Now, knowing in this case, and that type of report, I must know the intermediary and how responsible he is. Well, in practically all instances here, the intermediaries are outstanding people, so I have every reason to believe them. But the stories they relate from their informant, the witness, again, it's very astounding. Those who, again, participated in retrieval operations or had occasion to see the bodies and or the craft in hangars or in the field or wherever, or have worked on them. And those who have seen the bodies, well, my main source in my previous paper was a medical doctor who informed me that he had performed an autopsy. Now, he is high on staff of a major eastern hospital. He has a colleague who also is on staff, a chemist. I've talked to them. I've been to the doctor's home. I know what he's relayed to me. He's given me a report to publish, minus his name and, of course, the name of the hospital. I published this, Bill, in my second status report, my second paper, which has been out now for 2.5 years. I think what he has given me, I can't find any reason why he would be misleading me, is very astounding, because he describes the body. And I'll do that a little later if we get into that section where you want to talk about the bodies a little bit, where I'll read what he had sent me for publication.
I tell you what we'll do, Leonard. We have a lot of time. We've got an hour and a half here to go. I want to take just a little bit of break. I want to invite the people now. You can start calling in. We will talk to you about the Christ UFO. There are many of them in the United States and around the world. About the bodies that have been found. About the fact that the government is lying to us about it. For whatever their reasons. And they may have what they feel are good reasons, but nevertheless, they are. And that's why you and I are here doing our thing. I don't believe a thing that they say about the UFO phenomenon. And you're talking to probably one of the world's greatest experts on it, and that's Leonard Stringfield. He is my guest tonight on Open Mind. And if you are under the impression that we do not have crashed UFOs in our possession here in the United States, you're wrong. And we can prove that. Leonard's papers prove that, and you can get a copy of them. And we'll tell you how to do that a little bit later on. We'd love to get it in a court, you know, so that they could talk about it there if they will.
I don't think it'll happen.
It just won't happen. They'll never put that in a court.
No.
Because then now they're going to have to talk. But it is a fact of life. It is one of those things we're going to have to learn how to cope with. And you can't cope with reality until you understand what it is. And what I don't understand is why our own forces at B are not telling us what is going on in a very official way. They are wrong, and they are dead wrong. I'll be back in just a moment with Leonard Stringfield, and we'll continue. We have a lot of them in various places. And if you'd like to talk to Leonard about that, you certainly are welcome to. Let me give you the numbers first, and so you can get in and talk to us, okay?
If you're calling from the Maine, Los Angeles area, dial 520, followed by the word talk. T-A-L-K. Talk is the word. It follows all of our numbers. For the San Fernando Valley, dial 990. And if you're in the San Gabriel Valley, which includes Alhambra and Whittier, dial 448. In Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, dial 244, followed by talk. And in Compton, Lakewood, and the Long Beach areas, dial 639, and then talk.
KBC time now, 20 minutes away from 11 o'clock. By the way, for those of you that are in the 805 area code, and Ventura and Canyon Country, and even over in Northern California and Central California, we have an 800 number for you to come in. It's toll-free to you. The number is 800-262-8255. We'd like to hear from you, too. I'm Bill Jenkins with Leonard Stringfield tonight. Lynn, let's go to a caller and see what's on their mind, shall we? Well, first of all, I want you to tell me about the latest case you have before we do that.
Well, the most recent one is this in the stage of developing right now. I received a letter today to asking me to be sure to appear at the MUFON symposium, which is being held in Toronto in the next couple of weeks. Well, in fact, it's on the 4th of July. and that this person has some very, very important information to relate to me, but I must be there in person to receive it. I can't go into any detail what was in the letter, but that is an ongoing thing, and whatever this person has to relate indicates it's some information from a very, very high general who has, I believe, some artifacts. And so I was planning to go to make the trip anyway to the symposium, so I'll have even more urgency to be there now if this person should show up with whatever he has. So that's an ongoing thing. As far as case histories, I have many. Just to relate a few here, touch base with a few in my current paper. One goes back to 1953 in Louisiana, near Camp Polk. The witness solemnly sworn what he had witnessed there. It was a retrieval of a valley craft that was embedded into the soft soil. He observed, along with his buddies, one dead alien being taken out on a litter and two injured aliens being helped by medics. And it was taken to the base hospital. And from that point on, everything was the highest degree of secrecy. This fellow has given me the complete report, everything that he observed, which is published in this paper. Another one, an excellent case, involved an aerial photographer who was assigned, amongst others, to a crash in New Mexico in 1954. His assignment was to take photographs of the craft and the body strewn on the ground from 40 feet in the air aboard his helicopter with a sophisticated camera, and then go on the ground and take photographs close up at a certain distance. His whole story covers many, many pages. Is also in my current paper. An excellent case. Another one involves a guard who guarded, he watched it, a craft of some sort at Great Lakes, which had allegedly been shot down by the Navy back in 1973.
I'm going to have him give information here, so take it down.
And then another one involves a Marine in 1967 who was dispatched along with other Marines to an area he's not sure quite where, because the plane was in the air for some period of time, but he had reason to believe that the plane was circling to throw him off guard as to the destination. But anyway, he observed the craft embedded in the soil again, and his job was had sort of specifics to it, which of course is outlined in my paper. But he had undergone quite a bit of harassment when he returned to relate the information to me. Was warned in many ways, had visitors, all sorts of things. His story is just is a complete story in itself. Well, I have all of that in this paper, what happened to him later.
Now, Linda, you're talking about your paper. Now, you've given us crash retrieval syndrome number one and number two. You got number three out, is that what it is?
Yeah, number three is will be out in July.
All right, now, hang on. If, can our audience, if they wanted that, can they get it?
Yes, what I'm suggesting here, Bill, let me just touch base there, because I know a lot of people will be asking you, and they're asking me later. Actually, it's a paper or a monograph. It's almost book size, which will be released at some time in July. It is now being typeset, and it should be at the printers in about a week. I'm taking orders in advance of those who want to take a chance with me. The estimated price is $10. Now, if it is less, why, of course, it would be refund enclosed in the envelope along with the paper. So the reason is $10 is because of the high cost of typesetting and printing.
It costs
about $4,000 just for typesetting and printing alone, not to mention all the other. So I thought that would be a fair price, but it may be less than that.
Okay.
Now, the title of the paper is the UFO Crash Retrievals, Amassing the Evidence. It's called Amassing the Evidence, or it could be referred to just Status Report Number 3. It would be simpler just to say Status Report Number 3, as you rather than try to remember the long title. The paper should be ready for mailing, I would guess, Bill, around the first week in August. So it's about a month away.
So if you wanted to get it, what's the address?
My address, I'm mailing this from my home this time rather than to a research organization. My name, of course, is Len, L-E-N, Stringfield, S-T-R-I-N-G-F-I-E-L-D. The address is 4412 Grove Avenue, G-R-O-V-E, Cincinnati, Ohio. And the zip is 45227.
Okay, we'll give that address again for you. And if not, we have it on record here, and you can call Lita at Broadcast Information Monday or Tuesday whenever you want to get around to it. I think that if you really want to know about this and get another view from what the government give you, that you should get Lynn's report. Are you ready to talk to some folks out there?
Anytime.
All right, let's go to one. George is on the line. Right now, he has had a personal contact of some kind. George, what's your situation?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
This is really difficult for me because I haven't spoken about this for a long time.
Well, welcome aboard.
Yeah, and it sounds freaky even as I think about discussing it. Anyway, about 10 years ago, I was part of a meditation group that psychically started to communicate in tongue with some energy forces that describe themselves as space. Not space, but energy forces from other dimensions who traveled into this dimension in spacecraft.
Okay.
And what we asked, and the information that we got was that some of the information we got was that they had the ability to change the molecular structure of themselves and their craft in this kind of an atmosphere. And what we asked them to do is to allow us to take pictures of them. And we challenged them to change the molecular structure of their craft, to reduce the size of their craft, and bring it into a living room. And they gave us instructions of getting certain kinds of infrared film and cameras set up, and we would be focusing the camera on specific areas and took pictures where we were instructed to take pictures using the light, they told us. And we had the pictures developed, and there it was. I mean, there are these spaceships, as clear as you can see.
What have you done with the pictures, George?
Well, we presented them to Stanton Friedman and to one of his associates many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing was really ever followed up with it, but I still have the pictures. And
I'd love to see them.
I would like to share them with you. Yeah, I think it would really...
I'd really like to see them. Quite fascinating.
Well, the story behind it is even more fascinating than that, but I do have pictures. Yeah, how would you like me to do that?
Just bring them to the radio station. I'm here all the time. In fact, they got a room for me back here. I live here.
Is that right? Well, then why don't I call you when I'm available and make arrangements to meet with you, and I'll just bring them there.
You've got a deal.
Very good. And I want to thank you for the work that you're doing. It makes it safe for someone like me to speak up.
Well, I'm if I can do anything else, and Leonard, I think you'll agree with me on this, if we can get people to start talking about what they know that they've been afraid to talk about before. This is one of the things that you run into all the time, isn't it, Lynn?
Just a second, please.
Yeah.
Somebody's at my door. I hope it isn't the CIA.
Yeah.
No, it's my daughter.
But if we can get people, you know, to speak out about what they really know, that they've been afraid to speak out before, we're doing our job, don't you think?
Yes. I think that what you're doing is very important, Bill, because I think that it allows people to feel a little more flexible. That somebody like what you're saying and what I'm saying, if we can overcome the problems, why shouldn't they come forward?
I would be curious to know if your guest had anyone else had an experience similar to mine, because this sounds really way out.
Well, there is a lot of that contact that goes on, George, and... one of these days, maybe I can sit down and do about a 12-hour show here and put it all together. You just would not know what's in my library at home.
Really?
It's very hard to filter it down, you know, to work in a 2-hour show. But there is something of incredible importance going on that we seem to want to push to the side. You know, it's more important what's happening in the Falcons or, you know, Haig resigned. That's all child's play about what is really the reality of the world that we're living in now. And that's one of the things that this show is all about.
That's so true. Well, I'm going to look forward to contacting you and getting together with you.
Well, I would look forward to meeting with you, George, and seeing the pictures and talking with you.
Thank you very much again.
Okay.
Right. Bye.
All right. Thank you very much. That was George talking to us. Let's go to another caller, please. Which one, Bob? We don't have one here. Let me give you the numbers so that you can get back into us. I'm talking to Leonard Stringfield tonight. We're talking primarily about the phenomena of the crashed UFO. Here are your numbers. In Los Angeles, the number to call for Talk Radio 79 is 520. That's 520 followed by the word TALK.
Every talk radio number is followed by the word talk. In the 714 area in Orange County, dial 750, and in the 213 area, dial 448, followed by talk. The South Bay area, dial 679, and in the San Fernando Valley, just dial 990, and then talk. All right, you've got all of those. By the way, our friends out in the 805 area code or in Northern California, Central California, they listen to us at night. We have an 800 number for you. That's 800-262-8255. Toll free. Love to hear from you. Call on in and talk to Leonard Stringfield and myself. Hello, I'm Bill Jenkins. Fran, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Hi. The question I have to ask is, what about the average citizen who might have had an experience and who did not take any kind of an oath? I had an interesting experience in 1955 on dry lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether it's... I've never talked about it to anybody, and I didn't think... I just never occurred to me to do so. And I'm just interested. Is there any difficulty for the average citizen?
First of all, what kind of experience are you...
It was not a crash.
Well, you hadn't had an experience with a UFO crash?
No, it was not a crash.
You just saw something?
Yes.
Well, that's a little different. See, now, as far as people observe what they observe, there's no problem there. Relating anything on that. So it just involves the military. It's only where the military is involved where you run into secrecy.
Okay.
And there are not too many civilians involved. It seems as though most of them are due to crash landing in remote areas, and the military can get there first.
Yeah.
Now, they have all the advantages because their NORAD system can pick up, can detect a UFO that has a flight problem.
Uh-huh.
From what I heard from the experts.
I think this was
and
the landing
site. And they can pinpoint that object to where it's almost going to crash land and then get their forces in there from the nearest military base to do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the civilian activity would be reduced, of course. Now, those who have been involved, who did witness such a thing happen, are immediately contacted by the authorities in the area.
Yes.
And then advised to either
quiet
get it or other means.
Yes, I'm told to be quiet for 10 years.
Be quiet forever.
Yes. So
no,
they do manage to get to the few people, and some of them, of course, have been willing to talk. There have been leaks. People have talked. But see, the problem is, who's going to believe them? Because there is no case for this. Now, what I'm trying to do is to make this thing almost a household term where we can discuss it freely and openly, where people will come forward to relate what they may have seen. Now, in the past, people have been scared to death to come forward and relate. Either they've been judged as a nut for saying such a weird thing, they want to believe them anyway, or they fear because they've been told to forget it or else by the authorities.
Did you have the authorities talk to you at all, Fran, whenever you...
Yes.
What did they say to you?
It was the CIA.
And what did they say?
Well, it's long and involved. I was involved at the time on a case. My fiancé was involved, and because of my fiancé, we were both under protective custody.
Hmm.
And it was while I was under protective custody, we had gone away for the weekend, and en route, we stopped by Dry Lake because I hadn't seen it.
Hmm.
And it was there that the experience occurred, and we were told to keep quiet. And a very interesting thing happened. We saw which was undoubtedly what I would call a landing, with the turned up charcoal in the oval shape. Anyway, the next day when we went back, guess what? It was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told, of course, then not to speak of it.
Now, this was on a military establishment.
Was very Dry Lake, California.
Yeah. What year did this occur?
Pardon me?
How long ago?
About 1954.
Okay.
55.
A lot of activity then.
Yes, there were many of them that were downed in that period. We from our military position at that time, we had a very aggressive policy. The orders were in the Air Force to bring one down at any cost. I've been told.
Yeah,
and some had been brought down.
But there was no trace.
No, by what means, I don't know. But
that was during the Eisenhower administration, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yes, that was a tough period. And
you had a real problem with that.
But now you observed something which seemed to have landed. That's interesting.
Yes, because there was no trace of any metal or any object.
Mm-hmm. How close were you to the event?
We were right there. We walked through it and around it.
Well,
it was a very, very large oval, all turned up with charcoal.
What size would you judge in diameter?
I would say maybe about 25 to about 30 feet.
Well, that's the popular size, yes.
And in the center was a turned up section. Now, this was a dry lake. Pardon me?
Have windows?
No, it wasn't a not. We did not see the object itself. Only the landing spot, the churned up, where the churned up charcoal or burned earth.
Oh, I see.
And the large oval with the.
But you didn't see the.
We did not
itself.
See the object itself.
And then what did they tell you to be quiet about? Just the landing site?
That was be quiet not to say what we saw. Not to say that we saw that.
And who told you to do that?
Somebody who had seen the object itself?
Pardon me?
Did you talk to anyone who had seen the object?
Well, the CIA at that time did not mention whether anyone had seen it. And we had not.
Mm-hmm.
All they said, that the person who talked with us, said, just don't mention it. Now, the next day, out of curiosity, we wanted to go back and take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But it was leveled.
Oh, yeah. That's the...
There was nothing there.
That's what usually happens. They bring the bulldozers in to level the ground.
In fact, we couldn't find where it was.
That's right. That's what they usually do.
That's a standard operating procedure, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have some cases like that. Yes, where they go in. In other words, you go back the next day and nothing has happened.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's just the rocks have been brought back. They even plant trees if necessary.
Well, I think they did move a few bushes.
Yeah. Yeah, they replace they transplant the bushes and so forth, make it all look very natural.
They did.
It's an incredible thing for secrecy. They
good cosmetics, yes.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if they spent that much energy on doing something about our economy?
That's correct, Bill.
May I say something?
Yeah.
Well, then you know what I'm talking about when you're relating there your involvement with secrecy and the authorities, the CIA, as you say. Why? This is the sort of thing that I've been involved in, and all these people that I've talked with, which is getting close to about 100 now, over the recent years, and they all have about the same story to relate. And it's just one story. One of usual fear and of talking too much.
Fran, you're not afraid to talk about it now, are you?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact.
Well, obviously not. You do.
As a matter of fact,
talked about a million people here.
Well, now, you haven't given your name. Are you willing to associate your name with your story?
I certainly am, and not only that.
You don't have to, but I'm just saying, would you be willing to do that?
You know what I would like, Fran, if you would?
Yes.
If you could put that down in how many pages it takes.
Oh, God.
And send it on to me. And I will certainly put it in Leonard's hands and some other people's hands. If you don't mind.
I don't mind, and I'd like to add something else.
Well, make it quick, because there's our closing theme.
All right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that there's other information I think you would be directly interested regarding the people visiting here.
Okay. You want to hang on, Fran? We're gonna break for the news.
But this is something that I don't think people are going to believe.
Well, that doesn't make any difference. You hang on. We're going to break for the news. Be back in about 5 minutes, okay? And one of the places that the world really is, and one of the things you're going to have to learn to cope with in the coming years, is this matter of extraterrestrial life. Don't poo-poo it, my friend. The United States government has spent billions of dollars on the fact that it's there. And our guest tonight is Leonard Stringfield. He's speaking to us from Cincinnati, Ohio, who has spent a great deal of time studying this rather closely. And with excellent journalistic credentials, and you can get the results of his work. Leonard, do you want to give us the address again and where we can get
All right. The title of the paper is The UFO Crash Retrievals, Amassing the Evidence, and it's referred to as the Status Report Number 3. It should be released, Bill, at the printer, sometime in July. It should be available around the 1st of August. Good luck with me. The estimated price is $10. If it's less than that, why, for each person sending in $10 will be refunded. So I'm taking orders right now. My home address is 4412 Grove Avenue, G-R-O-V-E, Cincinnati, Ohio, zip code 45227. So if you want to mail, take a chance. I'm I'm mailing your money in advance. Why, I'll hold that until around August when the paper is published and send it off to you.
Well, I just said, Leonard, I've known you a long time. They're perfectly in good company, so it's perfectly all right to do that. We were talking to Fran here just when we broke for the news. Fran, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still with you, and I'm sorry I didn't. I neglected to tell you how much I enjoy your program.
Well, thank you very much, Fran. Appreciate your board and the contribution you're making tonight. What were you going to tell us now?
Well, I'm trying to think. As a matter of fact, I think on second thought, maybe I shouldn't.
Well, no, that's okay.
Well, no, some of it...
on this show,
everything goes.
Right.
Well, on some of it, I would need permission from the other party.
Oh, well,
but let's put it this way. My fiancé at the time, he was quite a bit older,
mm-hmm.
and brilliant, extremely sensitive, and had a few weird disappearing experiences with him.
He just disappeared?
Well, yeah.
Well, you can't talk about it in complete clarity there, Fran, because you haven't got permission of your...
Well, that part I can't go into too much. In other words,
What I'd like for you to do, because it sounds like it might be a fascinating story,
it
but
is.
You're kind of getting
it is,
on
it
the...
Is, Bill, it is so unbelievable. Truth is
would
truth
you get with him,
fiction.
Would you get with him and kind of put it in notes?
I can't do that. I will have to call New Mexico and find out. I don't know whether he's living or whether he's still or not. We've long since separated.
All right.
And, but this is... And he was in contact with extraterrestrials.
We have a... burning interest in that sort of thing.
Do you have anything there on that line to back up that?
Well.
Other than testimony, I mean, is there anything?
No, I can't say it on the air. I can't give details on the air, but I would like very much to be able to write some of this to you, Mr. Springfield, because I think it would be very, very, not only be interesting, but I think it would be probably helpful in some way to what you're doing.
Would love to have it. Send it to Leonard or send it to me or...
I'd like to have his home address again if it's okay.
Let me go ahead and give it because that's
all
where
right.
Your book is anyway.
4412 Grove Avenue, G-R-O-V-E, Cincinnati,
okay.
Ohio.
Yeah.
Zip code 45227. What I could do, if you send a copy to me, why I can have it Xerox and send a copy off to Bill.
Let me assure you, Fran, that you're in fine hands there, and everything will be taken care of in the most discreet kind of manner.
But Bill, that is the thing I was concerned about. I've been approached to put this whole thing into some kind of narrative form for publication.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I said, it would blow some people's minds.
That's
and
what we're
if
all
I,
about.
If I give too much on the air, I think it might be the wrong thing to do at this time.
Not on this show, but that's all right. Why don't you get that to us?
I
will do this.
Why don't you get through that to Fran, and we'll have another show on this particular subject, and maybe we can get you on, and we'll talk even more in detail about it whenever you feel a little more free to be open with it.
That'll be fine.
Okay?
Yes.
All right, Fran.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind tonight. Leonard Stringfield is my guest. Leonard has spent, the last 8-9 years?
Well, on the I'm specializing now on the last... Well, since my book was published by Doubleday back in 77, I've undertaken the project to look into the so-called rumor of the crash retrievals of the UFO. And what I've run into is astounding. Now, prior to that, I've been in research now ever since almost World War II, but this is my specialty today, and what I've opened up is a real Pandora's box, really.
It is, and the Pandora's box, I think, probably hinges... from the great proclivity of the federal government to keep all of our heads in the sand.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Hit it right on the head.
And they are absolutely wrong in that contention. Totally and completely, we don't want to give away any kind of national secrets, but the fact that the extraterrestrials are here, that they have crashed on this planet, is a fact of life, and we're going to have to deal with it, and we're going to have to cope with it. And we're amassing the proof despite the government. You know, the government is there to serve us and not to rule us. There to do our bidding, and it is to our best interest that we know about these things. And if it happens to upset your religious apple cart or some of the other things, so be it. Facts are facts, and life is life, and reality is reality, and that's what we want to get down to. Ready for another call? Here we go. Hello. Shell, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what's on your mind?
Hello, Bill.
Yes.
A question for Leonard regarding the occupants.
Okay.
Yes.
And I know that you mentioned that some of them were aided and assisted from their craft, apparently still alive.
Yes.
And I wonder if any of them have managed to survive any length of time. And if not, if their passing on was due to some sort of incapacity to handle the Earth environment, or if you know why it is they passed away.
Well, I don't have the absolute information on that, of course, but what I've heard from sources, several sources, would indicate that they don't live long exposed to our atmosphere or under our conditions.
Usually it's a radiation problem, isn't it?
Yes, it could be that or other factors, which I'm not aware of course, but it seems that in some instances they live very, very briefly. In other instances, they've had some kind of a life preservation system worked out in later years where they could live a little longer. Now, as far as their longevity is concerned, I do not know that, but I understand.